Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey friends, welcome to this bonus episode of the Tennis and Bagels podcast. This is recorded some 12 hours after the women's final took place in Melbourne at the Australian Open, where Aryna Sabalenka defeated Qin Wen Zhang 6-3, 6-2, and defended her AO title and just won her second Grand Slam title before she turned 25, which apparently was a thing that she wanted to do. So congratulations, Sabalenka. That was a really interesting, pretty dominant, actually, run to the title this year. This was also Zhang's first final at a Grand Slam level. She has pretty much had a bit of a breakthrough last year. Nobody really expected her to really win this match against Sabalenka for some reasons, because of the draw that she's had and because of the form that Sabalenka was really showing throughout this tournament. But it was still a bit of a match. It showed a few, you know, good things from Zhang on her side of the net, and more of the same of Aryna Sabalenka, just essentially just playing as well as she's ever played. Her serve stats were pretty good. They were not exceptional in a way, but it was very controlled. She really played within herself. She's won 84% of her first serves throughout this match. She only served 67%, which is actually kind of pretty high off her serve, but Zhang, on the other hand, served a little bit less, like at 53%, won 74% of her first serves. It was an okay match. I think he showed a bit of flashes of brilliances from Zhang's side. I think she really tried a little bit to play over herself and she tried to go for way too many lines all the time. I think she tried to be overly aggressive at some points. Of course, Sabalenka really forced the issue. She really got a lot of good forced errors that allowed her to get the breaks and stay ahead. Just overall, throughout the entire match, basically played flawlessly. She played, calmly. She kind of believed in herself. She never really had a belief that she wasn't really going to win this match. Even at the last game of the match, when it was 5-2 and Sabalenka had a triple match point, that was pretty much the only time that she kind of like let her level drop a little bit. All the rushes that come in with, being a point away from winning another Grand Slam title. I can only imagine what this feels like, but it's definitely something that is known, that closing a match, especially like this, is not an easy feat. And she hit like two unforced errors, and then I think Zhang hit a drop shot winner to save one of those match points, I believe. It was a good game. I think it showed good things from both sides of the net. I think Sabalenka, kind of kept herself, together to really close this one out. She didn't really want to lose that game. She faced a break point after being 40 love up, but then Zhang couldn't really convert, but also because Sabalenka hit, I believe, an ace out wide. And then from then on, it was just to victory. I think this is really good for Sabalenka in general because she has had problems in the past about closing matches, closing difficult matches, closing matches that she should have won, but then lose. But then, and I'm pretty much looking at that Roland Garros semifinal she played against Karolina Muchova last year. Yeah, I think this could do wonders, being a multiple-time Grand Slam champion, you know, played within herself, really understood that she didn't really need to be going for every shot, for every line, for all the winners, you know, played extremely aggressive, don't get me wrong, but she didn't really overplay it, which I think is the most important part in that regard. And when it comes to Zhang, I think that she probably just tried a little too hard. I think that's honestly my honest opinion. Also, disclaimer, just kind of wasn't able to wake up at 3:30 a.m. to watch the whole match. So I caught from the second last game at like 5-2 in the first set up until the end of the match. So this is, I mean, it's probably like around like half of the match that I got to watch, but still. I do think that Zhang had a little bit of an issues, had a few issues about, you know, regarding her serve. I think she double faulted a few too many times. She had a six aces to six double fault ratio in the match. And, you know, that's not necessarily something that is overly terrible. Like in that regard, some people, you know, manage to win a lot more matches, you know, with even worse stats like this. But the problem is that they kind of came in clusters and Zhang would double fault like two, three times in a row. And that didn't make her games any easier. And her first serve percentage was a bit low as well, as a 53%. She won 74% of her first serves. But whenever she, you know, had a second serve, Sabalenka just kind of went for it. And I think the way that she was aggressive, Sabalenka was aggressive on the second serve return, was really good because she didn't really aim for any like small targets. She just really always aimed for really large targets. But she also just injected a lot of pace, took a ball really early, and I think that kind of just worked wonders for her. So yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see like what her season goes on. For now, I think that this, as I said, this slam title should give Sabalenka even more confidence than I guess we thought that she had gained last year to win, you know, more majors throughout the year. I think she's on the course to maybe become number one again this year and maybe win another Grand Slam title. Why not? But also worth mentioning that I think Sabalenka has reached at least the semifinals in every Grand Slam since US Open 2022. So that's pretty huge. The other thing that I just wanted to praise from Zhang is that even though she was making some errors, even though Sabalenka was pretty much overpowering her in every aspect of the game, is that she kept her composure, you know, very positively. She kept herself very positively on court. She kept believing. She hit good shots. She had good intentions when she kind of tried to build her points, even though I felt like she was trying a little too hard to go for all the small targets quite too often and too often missing. I think she hit a 16 to 19 unforced error ratio, which is more winners than Sabalenka hit, but then Sabalenka didn't really need to hit all that many winners because, you know, of her aggression and just forcing the issue on Zhang. But I do like that she tried really hard to until the end, and she wasn't really happy just to be there. She was clearly disappointed in the trophy ceremony. She, you know, really wanted to win. She really tried to go for the break at 5-2 down. I don't think that even if she had gone the break, this would have made much of a difference. It was a double breakup for Sabalenka, and I don't think that Zhang wouldn't have had the, you know, the boost on the first serve percentage that she would have needed to, you know, keep it going. And I don't know that Sabalenka would just like crumble that hard on after losing that game. I think she would still probably recover and just serve it out, even if she wasn't able to break right after that. But it is what it is. Now Zhang is the world number 7. This is a new career high. You know, that's, you know, great stuff, like a breakthrough. End of year 2023, continuing on 2024. This is great. I think that we are on to see really good tennis from Zhang from now on over 2024. And yeah, that's about it. I think that early to say how any season is going to go, but the signs from just this tournament and from the tail end October 2023 are very good. I think Zhang is a player that you kind of need to keep an eye on. On other news, we have Rohan Bopanna and Matthew Abdon, who won the Australian Open title. This is special because now Rohan Bopanna is the oldest first-time world number one at 43 years old. I believe this should be women's or men combined. I don't think that anybody would have done this. Like, it's incredible. It's an achievement. Also, this is also his first men's doubles title, which he adds on to the title that he won in Roland Garros and the mixed doubles with Canadian Gabby Dabrowski. So yeah, Gabby Dabrowski is part of Rohan Bopanna's history and at that point. So yeah, like, wow, what a story of, you know, resilience and, you know, just never giving up. And I think this is all sports is about. And I think doubles is a really great platform for this because it allows them to, you know, have their careers span a longer time. Bopanna has also become the oldest major champion. I think that they obviously would have meant this like in the singles and, you know, the men's and the women's category. I don't think they count mixed doubles categories here. 2017, he would have been 7 years there, 36 years old. So yeah, that wouldn't necessarily make him the oldest Grand Slam champion in that regard. But if you're discounting mixed doubles altogether, that's what it is. And a bit of a fun fact as well, like from Ebden, whose story gets a little bit like under the radar because of all the incredible achievements, obviously, from Rohan Bopanna, is that now that he's won, it's now three straight years that an Australian man has won the title, the AO title in men's doubles. And that's the first time that this happened since 1984, when Bopanna was actually 3 years old. So yeah, it's been quite the time for Australian men's doubles, I guess. I don't really know what that truly would mean for them over the long run. It probably is a bit of a renaissance, like in terms of Australian tennis. Now we had Ash Barty doing all the things that she did, and Alex de Minaur also, you know, reaching the top 10 for the first time and playing really great tennis. And he got to the quarterfinals of the Australian Open. So yeah, maybe there is something brewing in the Australian tennis scene that, you know, we'll be able to see further down the line over the next few years. And just one last note of something that also happened. I'm not sure if it was this Saturday or it happened over on Friday as well, but Dieta de Groot, probably butcher her name, but the wheelchair tennis player from the Netherlands is on now a 14 major winning streak, which is absolutely insane. Yeah, it's obviously like wheelchair tennis doesn't get as much, you know, airtime. I think it's really fun to watch. I think it's a really great sport. I think it's, you know, just great stories all over the place. Like it's you can't not admire these people, these athletes, for what they're doing. And yeah, I've tried once wheelchair tennis, and hitting the ball is not that difficult. You get used to it for a little bit, like very easily if you play tennis before. Problem is moving. Moving on a wheelchair is absolutely not something that I was able to do at all. It was like I was constantly like hurting myself, really, like as I try to like move on a wheelchair and just try to like reach for the ball. It was quite interesting. And obviously, as an able-bodied person, the urge of just jumping off of the chair and just kind of walking and running towards the ball was something that I kind of had at the very in the few first shots that I've played. But you know, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. So yeah, and I don't know if people know this too much, but also there is like one of my favorite tennis players of all time, another Dutch woman, Esther Vergeer. I probably also butchered her name, but she's won 21 Grand Slam singles titles in a row. At a time, I don't think Wimbledon was holding women's singles. She also didn't win all of those Grand Slams consecutively, in the sense that she skipped one of those. She didn't play the Australian Open in 2010. But yeah, she also didn't play the Australian Open in 2005. But yeah, she basically never lost. She had like I think like a 400 match winning streak and a 725 match winning streak, which amounts to 25%. Oh, what am I saying? 96.6% winning ratio. That's pretty insane. It means that out of 100 matches that she plays, she will lose 3 or 4 max. That's insane. Well, so that's about it. This is a little bit of a bonus episode. Didn't really go into too deep details of like the strategies of the, you know, women's doubles finals. But yeah, I think that my biggest takeaway here is just really that it could be a very interesting rivalries brewing up in the WTA now for the rest of the year. It just makes me excited to watch. And I'm also excited to not be waking up at 3 a.m. to watch Grand Slam finals or any other match for that matter. So shout out for every person living in the Australian time zone overall in that latitude, longitude, I don't know, but on that time zone, because, you know, a lot of the year is probably pretty brutal for them. So yeah, shout out for you guys. Following tennis must be really hard from where you are. So yeah, that's it for the women's final. Thanks for watching, listening for this bonus episode of the Tennis and Bagels. Shout out to Owen and Vansh, who couldn't be joining me today. But yeah, we'll try to like get an episode out soon for the overall review of the tournament. You can follow us at Tennis and Bagels on Twitter. Also, subscribe to this YouTube channel if you like all of the videos that we put up. And you can follow Owen at Tennis Nation. You can also read his book, The Golden Rivalry, which is publishing on Substack. The links are all in the description of this video, of the podcast. And you can also follow Vansh at Vansh V2K on Twitter. He's kind of like the master of stats. So if you want to know a lot of like crazy parallels and stuff that you just never really thought that anybody even would know, he knows. So yeah, just, well, that's it. Like, enjoy the men's final tonight. And if you're watching this video later on, yeah, just tell us, what do you think about this women's final? And if you're watching this after the men's final, what did you think of this? I have no idea who's going to win this. So that's kind of a very weird ending for this episode. But yeah, thanks so much for listening, for watching, and we'll see you guys later. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.